So today's gospel gives us the rare instance of Jesus cursing something. There's only one time when Jesus does a miracle of cursing. Very often he does miracles of healing, restoration, all of those different kinds of styles. But today is the one where he does the cursing. And it's important to realize that this miracle, in the sense of the many others, they have a teaching function. And so Jesus, he goes to Jerusalem. He just arrived in Jerusalem, and he knows that he's got 1 week left. This is right. This Passion Sunday was when he entered Jerusalem. Then possibly Passion Monday or Monday of Holy Week, he goes to he sees the temple, and then he comes back out of the city, and then he sees the fig tree, and then he curses it. And then he goes in, cleanses the temple. But what's interesting is that Jesus sees the problem in the temple one day, holds his peace, and comes back the next day. It shows you that even though he has this frustration and irritation at what's happening in the temple, he does, in fact, know how to restrain himself. Because sometimes people say, you know, oh, well, Jesus got angry in the temple. It means that I'm given license to be angry. It's like, yeah, if you're under control, buddy. Because a lot of people would like to justify their self-righteous anger by saying, well, Jesus did it. And it's like, he didn't do it like you do. If you can't be peaceable, even when you're angry, it's best to keep your mouth shut. So Jesus curses the fig tree. And then afterwards, they see the meaning of it. Now, I've called this what I call a Markan sandwich. He uses the miracle to explain what's happening in the middle. That Israel is not fulfilling the job that God sent it to, in fact, accomplish. To be a light to the nations, to proclaim God's mercy for the world. That all of their sacrifices, all of their worship was meant to not be done for their own sake, but for the sake of others. And then very gradually, the whole process becomes inverted, and they all start thinking about themselves, their own families, their own communities, and it just becomes incredibly self-serving. And Jesus sees it, and he's heartbroken, because you can see the symptoms of it in this money-grubbing kind of attitude. The people start trying to accumulate these blessings through the financial exchange, and then even the things that God provides to allow the poor to come to the temple have been used as an occasion for making money. And this is the thing that breaks Jesus' heart the most. God the Father loves us, and then we, through our own selfishness, keep others from God because we want to keep our own, in a sense, religious life. And the danger is that we become exactly like the barren fig tree that produces no fruit. The original blessing that God gives in Genesis is be fruitful and multiply. And that has to do not just with fruitful in terms of families, but this also has be fruitful in mission. Do things. Don't just believe in God and sit on your hands. Because if that's the case, then you don't actually believe. In the same way that when you've seen a good movie, you want to tell people. You want people to read that new book. You want them to see that new food or restaurant or something. And yet we don't seem to have that same impulse in terms of proclaiming that the living God truly does love us. So Jesus curses the tree. And it seems even more irrational because when he curses the tree, it was out of season. It's like, dude, relax. Like, it's not even supposed to be happening now. But it's also meant to enlighten us to something else, which means that you and I don't know when the time when Jesus is looking for the fruit is going to come. He knows. We don't. We must always be fruitful. Not when we think we're ready, but now. Now, we have to be fruitful the way in which God is sending us, not in hubris and in arrogance. But we must always have the desire to be fruitful in mission because we don't know when he will come. So this gives us an indication where Jesus is constantly warning the people of Israel that their time is coming and it's very brief. And eventually we do know that Jerusalem's temple will be destroyed, the people will be sent into exile, and they will never be able to go back really to Israel until after World War II. It's an amazing thing to think about how shattering this moment is for the Jewish life and for the Jewish world. Now, the interesting thing is that this is a dynamic that is constantly present. constantly present in Christian life as well. So today we celebrate the feast of St. Augustine of Canterbury. And Augustine of Canterbury was sent by Gregory the Great to preach the gospel to the English. They weren't English yet. It's really important for us to know that when Rome crumbled, they didn't have France, Germany, Austria, like all of these countries that we take for granted in the modern European landscape. They did not exist. They developed after several centuries. So Gregory the Great, he is called the Great because he helped reestablish the city of Rome after it basically just been wiped out. Nothing was left. No infrastructure, no civil structures. The people and the poor were left just to fend for themselves. It was anarchy and chaos. And so the Bishop of Rome, being one of the only institutions left, decided to gather it all together and to be able to have education and all these other things. And then he was so beloved by the people that they called him the Great. And in the midst of this collapse, he also knew that they can't just care for themselves. He had to send missionaries out to be able to help reestablish, or in some cases, send the gospel to various places. So Gregory sent Augustine and 40 companions from a monastery in Rome to be able to first establish the churches in England. And classic scenario of how God functions, he always sends a foreigner to preach the gospel somewhere. So now we've had the Irish from St. Patrick, probably evangelized by an Englishman or a Welshman. And now we have the English receiving the faith from an Italian. God is hilarious. The French receive mostly their gospel from Turks. you can never rely entirely on your own culture for the proclamation of the gospel. So Augustine winds up in Canterbury, and with King Ethelbert's help, because Ethelbert eventually wants to become a Christian himself, they start proclaiming the gospel and get everything established in Canterbury. And very gradually, you also see the correspondences between Pope Gregory and Augustine of Canterbury. And I remember reading these correspondences when I was in my university life, and I was doing a course on medieval history, and I saw something so beautiful that had gone undervalued. Augustine writes back to Gregory and says, I'm in this foreign land with a bunch of people who talk funny, and I don't quite understand them, and they don't quite understand me. What do I do with them? And Gregory says, well, they are going to be strange. And you will have noticed that they pray differently than we do. They have different altars than we do. And as long as it's good, use it. Don't destroy what they have. Acknowledge the beauty that happens to be going through there. And as you went through Gaul, modern-day France, as you went through Gaul, I'm sure you noticed some things that would be beneficial for those people as well. Go ahead, use it. And so you see these practical exchanges where these missionaries have to acknowledge that even though they are going to proclaim God, God is already there. And so now going back to the fig tree. Sometimes when a tree becomes overgrown or becomes too big and too old but unable to grow fruit, what do we really do with it? Right? The gardener and I are in conversations about which trees need to go eventually. Because they're using space, they're preventing things from actually growing, and they themselves, in the end, are waiting to go. Every now and again, God does allow civilizations to fall, because they become in themselves overgrown and prevent us from actually proclaiming the gospel. Now, some of you might have noticed that certain political leaders are being elected all over the world, and it's starting to get kind of creepy. It's starting to get kind of scary, and our first thoughts might be, maybe this is the end of Western civilization. We as Christians need not be bothered by that. We've seen this before. We've seen xenophobic, megalomaniac, crazy people enter the thrones of kings and bishops and popes several times before, and we have weathered those storms. And we know that when a tree falls, the best thing to do is to let it fall. Because on that tree, new trees can grow. Gaul is not Gaul anymore, but the church has preserved her heritage. Rome is long gone, and the church proclaims the same gospel. And the Angles are no longer the Angles, and they are definitely very different than they once were. But the faith that St. Augustine brought to them remains. If we are of the world, we fear the world's calamity. If we are of Christ, not so much. Our only goal is to bear fruit. And sometimes, even if it means that our fruit just means preparing the way for the next tree, then so be it. Our reward is in heaven, not these things that we seek. But it's still really nice every now and again to see a good tree bear fruit. And that's what I desire for our parish. I want people to be able to come here to find fruit that brings them life, to find fruit that brings them hope, because that's what Jesus truly wants from us.